Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com. Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer in store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. I suppose, not surprisingly, the opening parade down the Seine, the flotilla down the Seine on Friday night generated a lot of conversation, to say the least. Celine Dion stole the show at the end, singing from the Eiffel Tower. I don't know whether you've been watching over the weekend. She is currently Celine Dion, very quiet, unobtrusive, reserved entertainer. You would remember back when she won the Eurovision in Ireland in the RDS back in the day, but the normally reserved and quiet Celine Dion, and she's had her travails, as we know, with the passing of her husband and her own illness. She is currently dancing her way around Paris. I don't know whether you've seen the TikToks. Everywhere she goes, she is running up and down the street, taking flowers, being mobbed. Anyway, two issues arose for Irish people from the flotilla, the opening of the Olympics. And the first one didn't just affect Irish people or annoy Irish people. I've seen numerous bishops again on social media remarking about this Last Supper parody. And they say it was an insult. This was a flotilla with a man on a long dining table and with a group of 12 or 13 people. And this is from the Irish Independent today, from Aisling Bastable in Clontarf. As a practising Catholic, I found the parody of Leonardo da Vinci's The Last Supper in the opening ceremony of the Olympics in Paris very offensive. The performance was blasphemous and insulting to Catholics all over the world. It is incomprehensible that such an act would be allowed to take place by the committee organisers. I doubt any other religion would be insulted in such a manner. It was shameful, to say the least, but God will not be mocked. And I see a couple of sponsors are already indicating they might be pulling out because of what they are agreeing with that image, that it was blasphemous. But another issue that arose, and we've had contact here on Liveline about it, is about the Irish athletes' uniforms, as they're called, specially designed, as you know, for the occasion. Philip Gaffney, Joe with RT.ie 51551. Philip.
Joe, how are you?
Good. First of all, your credentials. You represented Ireland.
I was on the Irish team in the 1980s. Right?
Okay.
Now, this is in martial arts, but
okay,
we didn't actually have Olympic recognition until Korea.
Ah.
So
okay,
in the early 80s, I was training and had made it onto the squad. Now, to give you an idea, and you'd remember the 80s yourself and how depressed it was, money-wise,
yeah,
and the whole lot.
Yeah.
So I originally came from Finglas, so I had to get from Finglas to UCD to train, which cost £3.50 a week, which was a lot of money then. Right?
Okay.
I was only 15. And so I had to make the choice of, do I walk or do I train? So I was walking in Paquins in Finglas at the time. I was getting 59 pence an hour. And I wanted to train, I wanted to be on the squad, but mm-hmm, it was very difficult, right? So it's that background that I'm raising the issue of the uniforms and the lost opportunity to the
okay
athletes. There was 133 athletes there, each one of which has bled, and apart from the people who didn't make it, who tried to qualify,
of course, yeah,
each one of them have bled for their sport. And the only opportunity they get to raise funding is through sponsorship, is by basically going onto the world stage and saying,
mm-hmm,
look how good we are, and now can we get some extra sponsorship? And it sickened me to see that, no disrespect to the designer, I don't know who she is, I don't know what
Laura,
the better.
Laura Webber, world reputation, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, we're all this, you know, we're all
from Rathfarnham in Dublin, based in New York. That's
based in New York, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't about her, it was about the athletes. And we have enough people here, we're O'Neill's, we're McKeever, we're Azzurri, who could have just made uniforms. We should have focused on the athletes. They have lost, by doing what they've done in promoting what to me looked like karate suits with buttons on them, by promoting that and focusing on that, they took the focus off the the work that the athletes have done. And to put it in perspective, right, we are one of the wealthiest countries in the world, but yes, our athletes, the most they can get is 40,000 a year.
Wow.
To actually compete. And that's only if you're at podium level. So if you're not at podium level, if you're not winning medals, you're not getting that kind of support here. So, like, even just to put it in perspective, for they compared us to Sweden. Sweden have 118 athletes.
Okay.
They have, from so let's just look at the athletic side of it. We have 3 indoor training facilities for athletics in Ireland.
Okay.
Sweden have 40.
Wow.
We have 3. Now, we actually have more athletes there than Sweden does. We've less population, we've less GDP, but yet, what little, very, very little support our athletes get, look how well they've done.
And as you can say, you blood, sweat and tears. Now, describe I've tweeted the photograph, and it's, you'd say they're like, they're white for a start.
Yeah, well, to me, it looked like, I just looked at it and thought, I actually thought it was the karate team, and I was delighted to see the karate team, because I did martial arts from a very young age, from the age of 10. So I looked at that and thought, yeah, that's great. Like, and then it wasn't. It was about, so here's the other side of it, right? When you compete, so these athletes are only going to get a short window to compete for these 2 weeks. Some of them will do very well, some of them not so well, and then they will live that story for a long time. And part of living that story is wearing the green jacket, is being able to wear that uniform in another environment, wear what you wore to the opening ceremony in another environment. Me looking at that, I don't see any environment where I can casually wear that jacket, and like if I'm looking for sponsorship for something, or if I'm looking to use that to enhance the position I'm in, to get funding for my sport, or to help anyone else, I don't see that desire. Now, I mean, it's lovely for the catwalks of Paris and all that, but that's not what it's about. It's supposed to be about focusing on the athletes and helping the athletes out. And what I would actually say, what I would like to say to the Irish government and to the Sport Ireland and to Simon Harris, who said he's behind the athletes, give them $2 million. Give them the $2 million in advertising that they lost by you focusing on, and no disrespect to the designer or any of that, but they got that advertising and they shouldn't have.
Explain that to me, the $2 million they lost.
Okay, so there's 200 countries exhibiting at the, taking part. Well, technically, there's no country exhibits, it's actually Olympic committees from each country.
Exactly, so, good point, yeah.
Yeah, no country is actually represented, it's actually different groups.
They have the franchise, the Olympic
committee. Olympic committees have the franchise,
franchise,
exactly.
Yeah.
So what's happened is every sport lives and dies on its sponsorship. Like, and you can see, as you mentioned earlier, and I do agree that it was sacrilege on the other thing, but people live and die on the sponsorship.
Okay.
So all of them athletes that are over there, they will get coverage. And I was involved in the High Performance Fund in the early 2000s. I was on an athlete.
Now just explain the sponsorship thing.
So the sponsorship thing is very simple. The coverage they gave to that uniform should have been given to the athletes. If I want to put an ad or get my name mentioned or get the positive association, you pay for it. So Coca-Cola, all of these companies pay for their positive association with this Irish team.
But could the Irish athletes have worn an O'Neill's jersey? Or
yes, they could have worn an O'Neill's jersey or a McKeever's jersey or an Azzurri jersey. Like people who actually, and the reason I would say mention those people here is because in everyday sports that are happening in Ireland, every single day of the week, these companies assist athletes.
Okay,
they may not get
point.
All the exposure
yes,
that
yeah,
they need.
Good point. Yeah, okay.
But
we've asked the Olympic Council of Ireland for the cost of. See, it's the opening ceremony suits and trainers. They are specially made trainers. Well, I'll explain them in a minute. For all the athletes, the closing ceremony, all the athletes, the closing ceremony jackets, which I've seen are kind of blazer. But it's a completely different outfit, so that's another expense. The Olympic Federation of Ireland executive suits. I didn't know the suits were given suits, but they are being specially made suits. The hospitality team uniforms, no one would begrudge that. Laura, and they keep saying New York based. I don't know, but does it matter damn where you're based? Anyway, that old business. Okay, that's neither here nor there. Yeah, that's just me.
The big thing on design, and I have another bone to pick, but I won't go into that. But basically, design, it doesn't matter who you are, where you are. It's how you design. Like, where it's designed is irrelevant. It's how it's designed and how it actually functions for the task it's designed for. Like, you know, I could go into the design and I could, you know, talk about the four-leaf clover, which I think mocks us, you know, but it's
where's
not about that.
Where's the four-leaf clover?
Apparently there's a four-leaf clover embroidered on the sleeves of the jackets.
And why does that mock us?
Because it portrays us in the same way as the shamrock and shillelagh culture of a four-leaf clover. Ireland's emblem is a shamrock. It's not a four-leaf clover. A four-leaf clover was imposed on us.
The material. Laura used eco-hybrid taffeta, fabric formerly used on luxury clothing. Eco-hybrid is a patented and sustainable fabric manufactured using recycled T-shirts and PET plastic bottles. It features a soft touch, sand wash finish, water wicking, and moisture permeable fabric. Laura has taken a sustainable approach that speaks to a broader commitment of challenging her design practice to reflect the constraints of limited environmental resources and impact. The women's jacket design, the silhouette for Team Ireland is inspired by the traditional double-breasted sporting jacket. As creative director, this is Laura, I envisioned that the women would wear sharp tailoring, and the double-breasted tuxedo style was a smart option for canvas lapels, shoulder pads and double buttons down the front. It's a striking silhouette that radiates power. I also kept true to the full motion muscular athletes require by using a raglan sleeve typical of a footballer's jersey. Now, you still think it looks like a karate outfit?
No, that's lovely. And I don't decry any of that. And that all sounds wonderful. But it's a single-use item.
Okay.
So how is your...
The men's jacket design. For the men, I chose a similar look, a double-breasted jacket, and remixed it with a bomber jacket length and the cuts of a high-performance track jacket. We all looked at the traditional trench coat for the cuffs and lapel shapes. Looking to add formal elements, I added symphony ticket pockets. Yes, I never saw them Bortons and Cambridge. But anyway, I added symphony ticket pockets that can carry a smartphone and classic flap pockets to finish the modern look. Through the tech fabric's permeability and the use of open back vents across the athletes' backs and the mesh linings, we ensure each athlete remains comfortable and cool throughout their monumental experience. To also help with body temperature control, we added metal eyelet grommets to allow air flow. Oh, that'd be under the arms, wouldn't it?
Allow
air flow through the pants.
The pants
are from Eco Hybrid Tech Fab. Have you seen, like, the pants kind of finish at the knee and then there's kind of a transparent mesh,
transparent thing on the side
mesh that goes from the knee down to the ankle. Yeah. So we can see, and well, he's a gorgeous pair of pins. We can see Shane Lowry's legs from the knee down.
Yeah.
It's the transparent mesh panels make for a sporty aesthetic to a traditional suiting style. I also added a tuxedo stripe and sport piping down the sides. This gave me an opportunity to design a plaid horsehair textile known to be used in Irish suiting with an added patriotic element of patina green, white ivory and reddish-orange Duchess satin silk to symbolise the colours of the island. We muted these tones with a pastel-coloured palette so the entire look would be elegant and timeless. Women's pant design is a chic cigarette cut, women's cropped hem, inseam zipper opening for flared wear, ample pocketing, airflow metal eyelet grommets, elasticated waist and drawstring with bullet tip finished. Men's pant design, modern taper jogger with ankle ribbed hem, men's inseam gusset with football flat lock stitching and deep patch pockets and back yoke for comfort.
Now, does that sound like what a sports person would be interested in? Like, that sounds lovely, and that sounds, I'm sure, from a fashion designer's point of view or a clothing designer's point of view, it is absolutely fantastic. It's a single-use item that they wore at the opening ceremony, so that throws out the sustainability credentials. I don't think any athlete is going to wear it into a casual situation because they're going to stand out in a big white, like wearing a white suit.
The sleeve. Okay, 51551. Sorry, but just this is more from the discovery. From the description, the sleeve is adorned with an embroidered patch representing the county emblem of each Olympian. As designers, we interpreted the emblems, and through beads, sequins, and stones, we embellished our response to them. This is easily one of my favourite parts of the uniform, said Laura. I expertly designed customary work, and this element gives each athlete that feeling of uniqueness and personalisation. Across the back of each athlete's jacket sits an embroidered tweed Ireland patch made of tufted thread surrounded by cross stitches. We chose these techniques to give the impression of grass, incorporating the textural landscape of Ireland. We also created a radial colour gradient to give the piece extra dimensions and expression. Keeping with tradition, we put there's a brooch on each lapel for each athlete. Yeah. The brooch is made of four embroidered shamrock petals to create an organic shamrock bundle. And of course, to bring each athlete luck upon starting their journey. And also they say that the athlete can take the brooch home with them as a memento. The jacket buttons are 5mm Lux weight gold plated mother of pearl buttons, and it goes on and on and on.
I'm sure it's all lovely. Yeah, and yeah. I'm sure it costs a hell of a lot more than a tracksuit. Like, or than a standard issue. Like, no athlete, and I can tell you, no athlete gives a damn what the thing is made from. What they want, when they're out there in the rain and they're training and they're killing themselves to actually get a chance to represent their country. And the idea of the county emblem is fantastic, because Ireland, we're still tribal, and the proudest thing we can have...
I mentioned the county emblem. Hang on a minute, Philip. Hang on. There's a problem. Dublin or Paris, we have a problem. Joe at rt.ie 51551 text. Nuala, the counties, there's one missing apparently.
Oh,
there's one missing, Joe, yes. Not impressed at all that Leitrim was left out.
The lovely Leitrim.
And we have a great record of punching above our weight with Olympian athletes, but we don't have anybody this year. Okay. But that's not the point. Okay. We're one of two counties that aren't having representatives this year. But had we a representative, we don't have an outfit.
So the Leitrim logo, our emblem, what is the Leitrim emblem?
I would now have to hop along, seeing I've just done my ankle in, I'm on crutches.
Oh, you poor thing.
There's me under the Olympics for a few years.
counties left out? Well, sorry, what other county anyone in the Olympics?
Oh, I'm pretty sure it's Westmeath.
Okay, and is Westmeath on the uniform?
It is. Yeah. Now, I heard an interview with Laura,
Leitrim has a very distinctive coat of arms. It's like a dragon come line
Shannon,
and three rivers.
Shannon
yeah,
run
three
through
rivers.
It.
Yeah, 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 of course, yeah. Shannon, yeah.
But it gets a bit tedious, Joe, that Leitrim is always the forgotten county. And
where are you talking about again, Nuala?
There you go.
Lovely Leitrim.
Lovely Leitrim.
The thing is that anybody who does come and visit here falls madly in love with it.
Absolutely. Lovely Leitrim.
And of course, speaking about punching above our weight, our GAA women are in Croker next Sunday.
Great.
Against Tyrone. Our population is 33,000. But I suppose I can't say on air that national media forget about us, but we do get forgotten about quite a bit. So this really irked me, Joe, that, we've had huge representation over the years in the Olympics, but had somebody qualified, we wouldn't have an outfit to wear.
Okay,
so not good enough.
Nuala, well, what do you think? Did you see the outfits?
I did.
And what do you think of them?
Well,
or Philip says they're like karate suits with patches, or karate suits
with buttons. Now, I did hear Laura, the designer, interviewed about them, and I loved the whole sustainability buzz that she had, because that's where I come from as well.
Yeah.
I did think, I suppose, when Leitrim wasn't represented uniform-wise, I did think, well, it was a fairly grey day in Paris, quite similar to the weather you get in the northwest in Ireland.
So they got the Leitrim weather.
I wouldn't be going out in a white suit.
That's true.
On a grey day in Leitrim.
And Philip, to say there, Nuala, please, Joe at RT.ie. Philip, okay, they wear the outfits for the opening ceremony. Do you wear them on any other occasion?
Well, no, you won't wear them on any other occasion, but you will wear, had it been more functional, as opposed, they're talking about sustainability, right? It's not sustainable if it's a single, it's basically a penny fashion item, which is a single-use item. The sustainability credentials are gone. The design and all the other stuff sounds wonderful, and how they're made, and actually where are they made? That's another point. Were they actually made here? You're talking about your carbon footprint, and you're talking about all of this. And I'm talking. And my thing. I don't want to get too caught up in the uniforms, because my big issue is
money.
The funding that was spent on them should go to the athletes. And I think compensate. And I don't represent any athletes. I've no skin in the game here, other than the fact that I know years and years ago there wasn't any funding, and now there's still not enough funding. We need more. I used to do the high jump. I used to do the shot put and the discus. We don't have the facilities for throwing the hammer, for doing the discus. We don't actually have those facilities on this island. How are we expected to compete at an international level? And the money is there. We're one of the wealthiest countries in the world. I think we're either third or fourth wealthiest in the world. So I think we need to start looking at funding our athletes correctly. 40 grand a year is the max. That's the max.
That's
the
shocking. Your comparison with Sweden is unbelievable. They also got special, every athlete got special tennis shoes, the sneakers. They're custom-made tennis shoes to incorporate vintage sporting elements and modern vulcanized layers of rubber for strength, giving depth to their shape and form. I was inspired by classic turf sports and the leather work of antique sports equipment. I created a shoe from source Napa leather, premium calfskin leather, and finished with brogue wax laces. I used buckthorn brown leather to unite the look with reddish orange tones that are traditional to Ireland and classically used in horse riding equipment. I add an embossed leather charm in the shape of shamrock for the athletes to carry as a memento of the event. Now, Philip, in the world we live in, we do need creative people like Laura to create fashion, to create jackets. And all of this filters down.
Yeah, I am not decrying. We do need creative people. That's what I actually work at. I'm only back from France representing Ireland in a creative forum. I was one of two people chose to represent Ireland at Lyon, representing 70 different countries. And myself and an artist from Gilly Designs, we both represented Ireland over there, over the Bloomsday weekend.
Explain that to me, Philip.
Basically, in France, they had a fête de consul where 70 consuls from around the country have an exhibition in Lyon, and it was over the Bloomsday weekend. No. I went over to represent Ireland. I was chosen as one of two artists to represent Ireland.
Okay.
I create pieces that tell of James Joyce and how he lived. I do busts of Joyce, and I also do Om pieces, which is an ancient form of Irish writing, and it's uniquely Irish. So I was over giving talks on that, I'm not giving out about the girl design. What I'm giving out about is it was the wrong opportunity to. It's not a Paris fashion show. It's a show for the athletes. It's actually. Let's take the O'Donovan brothers. No one knew until your man said, pull like a dog, and he got all this massive exposure, and they did really, really well. 2 days before that, no one would have known who the O'Donovan brothers were. But now they're rock stars. And there are 133 athletes over there, all of whom hoping to be rock stars. And they're not going to be rock stars if we're focusing on what they're wearing. And I think the least the government can do, either the Taoiseach, Sport Ireland, somebody, is to actually say to them, you know what, lads, there's 2 million, divide it amongst yourselves. We're sorry we messed up on the opening thing. And not to take away from the designer, who I'm sure from a design perspective and all the work she's put in, I don't want to decry that. I think she's done a fantastic job as a designer, but I think it was the wrong platform to be promoting Irish designers. Like,
okay. Stay with us. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RTE.ie, we're receiving comment on the Irish Olympians, their uniform that they wore on Friday night on the barge, the flotilla going down the Seine, and it was all white. And as Philip Gaffney, who contacted, he's also an artist, by the way, and a former represented Ireland internationally, he said it looked like he thought it looked like a cratty outfit. But the big thing he was upset about is that the money. I think people are shocked hearing the amount of money the small amount of money that Irish Olympians get compared to, for example, Sweden and facilities in Ireland. 3 indoor tracks. Is that right, Philip, in Ireland?
Yeah.
Athlete?
Yeah.
3. And many in Sweden again?
40.
Similar. Well, they've a smaller. We've a smaller population.
They've actually less people than we have, which just shows that if we get a little bit more support. And you see, here's what happens as well, Joe. And I'd be involved in a lot of sports, like clay pigeon shooting, Gaelic, the whole lot. And then people compare, and like ice hockey, and trying to promote them all. And people go, oh, but the GAA have this. And I'm going, yeah, but what you have to understand is the amount of people actively involved in GAA and that promote it, and like there's 5,000 pitches around the country or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, you're comparing apples and oranges. But for these athletes who are in Paris right now, this is as important to them as wearing the county jersey was for Armagh and Donegal yesterday and for Clare and Cork last week.
And Nuala then contacted us to say that Leitrim, the uniform also contains references to the emblems of each county, obviously in the Republic, isn't it? Even though you can be from Northern Ireland, as there are incredible athletes.
Rory McIlroy is down as one of the down for golf as part of the team.
Right. I know that. You know, stay there, Nuala. Stay there, Philip. Claire, good afternoon. You're listening. Go ahead, Claire.
Hi there. No, I just wanted to say, I'm sure they would have made one for Leitrim had there been somebody there from Leitrim. I don't know why it's been picked up. I thought they did a great job. They looked good. A uniform is supposed to, you know, be a cohesive look, and I thought it did that. So,
okay, but Nuala, don't you say? Well, your point is, Leitrim or not, your county is irrelevant really to represent your country in the Olympics. But you're saying, Claire, Leitrim, as Nuala said, Leitrim's not. There's no one from Leitrim representing us at the Olympics. So you say, what was the point of putting the Leitrim emblem on it?
Well, like, people would have been given out if there was a fair made with Leitrim's badge on it. I mean, given the people are given out at the cost.
Apparently there's 13, I stand to be corrected here, but apparently there's 13 different counties represented. So all the counties aren't represented.
Okay,
people from the 13 different counties are at the Olympics. But all the 32 counties are supposed to be represented on the uniform, but apparently they've left Leitrim out. That's my understanding. Now, I do stand to be corrected on that. But I believe it's 13. And being from a county, like, this is a uniquely Irish thing. An awful lot of business in America. And when you ask an American where he's from, it's from wherever he happens to be living at that particular point in time. You ask an Irish person where they're from, and they can be living in Dublin for 100 years but be born in Cork, and they're from Cork. Something we're still very tribal, and it's still the pride in your county is immense. Like, and that lady from Nuala is right. From like to have your county be, and especially like a county like Leitrim, because once you go west of the Shannon, there has been a lot of underdevelopment and underinvestment over west of the Shannon for an awful long time. You know, so to be left out again, I can. Look, I'm a Dub, so we're always included. So I can understand how she feels. Like to be left out, it's you know, leaving out Leitrim is not right.
And there is specific... Sorry, Claire, yes.
No, I was just going to say, like, presumably, I believe I heard that the athletes would have nominated themselves into a county's colours, you know, so maybe that was a, you know, an oversight that they should have said, geez, we're that close to everybody, we should put everybody on it, but apart from that, you know, you can hardly blame them.
Yeah, but you can, because they made an issue of it. You see, if they hadn't mentioned the counties, if they had left, it's basically like thanking anyone at the end of something. You either thank everybody or you thank nobody. You say, I'd like to thank everyone here, as opposed to naming individuals, because you're going to forget.
And
somebody.
Claire, in the explanation of the uniforms, like, county is mentioned specifically, that there was reference. They wanted to make reference to the various county emblems. Okay, Maura, Joe at RT.ie51, you're listening to this discussion. Maura.
Hi, Joe. When I saw the photograph in the paper last week, it was the overall uncomfortable nature of the outfit that struck me. To me, it looks like a cross between a straitjacket and a spacesuit, I'm afraid. And I was interested to hear the designer speaking about all of those details on the radio last week. They're all great, but that's not the overall thing. I would not like to be a person wearing that kind of half-mast uniform. It's neither up nor down. It's neither up at the waist, down at the hips. It's not up at the knee. It's not down at the ankle. It just doesn't equate, as your first caller said, with what sports people actually wear, in my opinion.
Okay. What did you say? It was a cross between?
A straight jacket and a spacesuit. That's what it looks like to me.
What do you think of that, Claire? So a karate outfit, a straight jacket and a spacesuit.
Well, to be honest, the irony is that I'm even speaking to you about this, because when I texted in, I said that literally there's a conflict going on in Gaza. The irony is that we're spending our, you know, time.
Yeah. Well, it's a rich, yeah. You don't have to, Claire, if you don't wish. Like, it's a rich, rich tapestry, and rightly so, we cover Gaza morning, noon and night here on RTE,
sure.
And the horror will never leave any of us, as you know, and then what people are going through is just beyond. No, that's fine. It's a rich tapestry, if you pardon.
Indeed.
If you pardon the pun. Okay, where's Nuala? Nuala?
I'm here. Don't forget about me, Joe.
This is for you, Nuala. To try and make up from lovely Leitrim and the Shannon Beatles.
I had a pleasant dream. I woke up with a smile. I dreamt that I was back again in dear old Erinside. I thought I saw Loch Allen's banks in the valleys down below. It was my lovely Leitrim where the Shannon was.
Are you there, Nuala? Come on, come with me.
I'm here, keep singing.
This is the late Larry Cunningham.
Of grandeur and light. I headed off for Kerry town before the dark of night. I passed Sheemore, that fairy hill where flowers widely grow, and I saw the grave of Fimbulcore where the Shannon waters flow. The next I saw was Fianna town with her ancient walls, where the preaching of her holy monks re-echoes through her hall. I stood with reverence on the spot, reluctant for to go. From the town of saints and sages square, the Shannon waters flow.
That's beautiful, isn't it, Nuala? It's beautiful. That's Larry Cunningham, and he mentioned Loch Allen, he mentioned Shannon Waters Flow, he mentioned Carricktown, I presume that's Carrick and Shannon. Sheemore, where's Sheemore, Nuala?
Sheemore is near Ballinamore.
Okay, the fairy hill where flowers widely grow. Okay, you mentioned Finn McCool. Fianna Town, where's Fianna?
Fianna's in South Leitrim as well.
Okay. And
not too far from Ballinamore.
Where the preaching of the holy monks re-echoed. Was there holy monks in Fianna?
The beautiful old abbey in Fianna that you can visit.
Now he doesn't.
Really, well,
See, that's how
as you know, Joe, Leitrim is beautiful.
Now, I know there's, I know it's in the song. I didn't hear it all there, but
the reinforcement of the forgotten county is what annoys us a bit.
Okay, but I see there Larry Cunningham in that song, lovely, didn't mention Mohill. I suppose he didn't want to make a mountain out of a molehill. Okay, Nuala, good amila mahagat. Claire, good amila mahagat. Philip, good amila mahagat. Shmarek, good amila mahagat. Mona McSharry, gold, tonight. We're all behind you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Experience summer comfort for less. Explore our sale on curtains and bedding. Perfect time to update and freshen your home.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I remember, we won't be Westmead, we won't be Leitrim, we won't be Sligo. We're Carlow, the beautiful county of Carlow. This coming Friday for Funny Friday, Martina. Martina,
hi, you,
in Galway. I was
yes,
in Galway
indeed,
myself yesterday.
I
was in Galway yesterday. I went to the cathedral, beautiful cathedral.
Lovely.
Went to Mass there at 12:30. Okay, and had a look around and met some people. Martina, what happened in a supermarket in County Galway?
Well, Joe, basically something that happened to me on Saturday the 18th of May. And I had my wallet stolen from me in a large, well-known national food store in Galway. And basically what happened was I was targeted and followed by two females from the minute I entered the store, Joe, to be honest.
Okay.
And what prompted me to contact yourself was that since it happened to me on the 18th of May, through my own digging around online and stuff, I've discovered seven more women that it's also happened
wow.
to. So that's what prompted me to make the call. Now, what happened to me was, I suppose I was after doing a walk before I went in to do my shop. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a handbag with me on the day.
Okay.
But as I didn't want it left in the car while I was out walking. So I was just wearing a top that had no pockets. So I ended up putting my wallet, which was a big lump of a wallet, I suppose mm-hmm. you could call it. I put it into my shopping bag and then I hung the shopping bag on the trolley. And
okay.
I distinctly said to myself going in, Irish, sure it'll be safe enough. I won't be leaving my trolley unattended, which I didn't. So then went around, completed my shop, had my shopping list, looked at my list when I finished my shop to see did I forget anything, wheeled the trolley back down to the pasta aisle. And while I turned and reached up to get a packet of pasta from a top shelf, the thief had my wallet gone in the blink of an eye.
Wow.
The blink of an eye. And I never noticed a thing, Joe. And I would say I would be very on the ball. OK, now I had my shopping done at this stage, wheeled the trolley back up, joined the queue for the checkout. And then remembered, I said, oh, forgot the Parmesan. Rather than wheeling the big trolley back down again, I picked up my shopping bag to bring it with me. And then I realised it was as light as a feather and all I could hear were the coins jangling at the bottom of it. And then I knew in that instant that my wallet had been stolen because the clasp had been broken on my wallet and some coin
okay.
had fallen out.
Now, you didn't leave it at that, so to speak. You then did an investigation and you've tried to... for example, how did you know that there was two people following you? If there's two people following you, surely you would have noticed. You would have noticed them.
Yeah. How it was again afterwards, after the incident happened, Joe. So basically, I ran to the car, cancelled my card straight away on my banking app. That was the first thing I did. But then ran back into the store to get help. And initially it was a case of, oh, you know, did you drop it? It might have fallen.
Yeah,
is it in
yeah.
your car? Are you sure you had it? Blah, blah. But then in the space of a few minutes, I started getting text messages from my bank about very large transactions
wow.
trying to go through on my card. And this all happened very, very quickly. And it was then that the store realized that, okay, something has happened here. So I was very upset at the time. I was screaming at them to look at the CCTV footage,
mm-hmm.
which they did. And they confirmed very quickly that, yes, I had been targeted from the minute I picked up the trolley and I was followed all the way around the store. I was followed by these women. All the way around.
Two women.
Yeah. Yeah, two. Now, one was at the front, who spotted me coming in. You could call her a spot. And then the other one followed me all the way around. And would you believe they actually nearly had me in fruit and veg when I turned to get the plastic rolls of plastic bags. I just turned to pick one of them off to put some fruit into. And she actually had her hand in at that stage, but because I turned quickly, she took it back out again and kept at me, kept following me.
But you
me
did
for
not, Martina,
minutes.
You did, no, not did not notice anything no. untoward.
All I was thinking okay. about, Joe, while I was doing my food shop, all I was thinking of is the dinners I'm cooking for the week. Yeah, have I got all my ingredients? Yeah. And I was completely oblivious to these women following me. Completely
and
oblivious.
The two of them were operating together.
Yes, operating together. They very, very quickly then, once they had my wallet, went to a nearby shopping centre, and that's where they tried to use my cards for large transactions. Again, the bank I had cancelled to at this stage, I completely forgot about my Revolut bank account, completely forgot that. But so I hadn't cancelled that. Mm-hmm. But luckily enough, Revolut had it shut down within minutes. They had it shut down. You know, so
and
they didn't.
By
get
the way,
anything.
How did you have the presence of mind to? Are you saying you cancelled your credit cards while you were in the supermarket?
Yes. Oh, the minute I knew my purse was gone, I ran as fast as I could go out to my car, and I don't know. I suppose I just sprang into action. I knew
but
I had to cancel my
card. But how did you get the number so quickly and ring the bank? And
I couldn't get a number. I went on to my again. I went the first thing I did is I went on to the banking app. And there was, and that's where I thought I would find a phone number to ring the bank. Couldn't find a phone number. Started Googling phone number, couldn't find a phone number. And then there was a thing on the app, freeze your card. So I did that.
Okay.
I did that. But then I wasn't sure, what did I do it correctly? I needed to speak to someone from the bank. But fair enough, they contacted me within minutes. They contacted me. So I was able to confirm that my cards had definitely been cancelled.
Wow.
You know?
I know the app and all that, but I wonder how many people have in their mobile phone the free phone to cancel their credit card.
Exactly, because that's I was contact. Looking for a number and I was saying, which number is it and do I ring? And then when my hands were shaking so much, I actually couldn't make a call. I was very upset and, you know, traumatised by what had happened and shocked. And I suppose my brain couldn't comprehend as well how or when it had happened, because I knew I hadn't left my trolley. It's not like I left my trolley and walked away and left my bag unattended. I didn't. As far as I was concerned, I did not take my eyes off my trolley, but I did for a split second to get a bag of pasta. And that's all it took, was that split second.
Now you say that the same supermarket say they've hit that supermarket, hit customers 8 or 9 times.
So that was me done that day. So obviously I reported it to the guards and there was a report done about it and all that. And then they also hit 2 other women. The same 2 people that did me did 2 other women in nearby Galway towns.
How do you know they're the same 2 women? Are they distinctive looking?
No, they are very distinctive. And it was confirmed to me that it was the same 2 women. So then when I heard that, then I also heard verbally about another woman that was hit in the exact same store. And to confirm that, I went and spoke to the store, someone in the store who's high up, and they confirmed that, yes, it had happened again in the same store and also in another store connected to them, say, nearby, and also in another store connected to them. And then online, I found, just by a Google search, I found 2 identical cases in Limerick. And when I say identical, I mean identical, Joe.
What do you mean identical? Do you mean the same?
As in
the same 2
yeah,
women?
The exact same. Not the same 2, but very the same as in, but not the same, if you know what I'm saying. But it was, the MO was the exact same as in, and this poor woman was 71. She was followed. Again, she only turned to pick something off a shelf. And that's when it was gone.
Now, at any stage, did you say, can I see, given that the supermarket were brilliant, did you say, can I see the 2 women were after robbing me?
Yes, I did. I wanted to see them for my own safety, because in my head, I said, okay, these women have followed me for 40 minutes. They know exactly what I looked like. They spent 40 minutes looking at me and studying me. They know me now. Okay. So I wanted to see what they looked like. I asked, could I see what they looked like? And absolutely under no circumstances was I allowed to see a picture of these 2 women that just stole my wallet. No chance, because of GDPR laws. GDPR, couldn't see it. Now,
but it
that
also,
I think is very wrong.
But it also means, If those two women, and they're seen clearly robbing your purse,
clearly,
and you confirm that your wallet, sorry, has been robbed, so it all adds up. You're saying, can that store even show those images to other staff?
No. And the
Why
store
not?
Can't show. The store cannot. I was told by the store they cannot share the image of those two thieves to even another store. They're not allowed to share the image with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I find this utterly bizarre, because what actually scared me in the weeks following it was that in my wallet, there's so much about me. My public services card was my loyalty card. So there's everything. I had pictures of my children. These thieves knew exactly what I looked like. Yes, I could be walking down Shop Street in Galway and they could be right beside me. They would know me. I would not know them. I don't think that's right.
Well, I heard of it. Well, there's a couple of. It was Belfast. I was reading the other day about shops in Belfast shutting because of shoplifting. Because I presume if they're robbing customers, they're robbing shops as well. They're shoplifting.
I heard
other figures from stores in shopping malls around around Dublin, especially, and the figures for shoplifting are jaw-dropping.
Astronomical, I'd say.
And a number of brands are going to go pretty soon, because they just can't operate in Ireland, and they can't show the staff, even though the thieves can't show the staff on the Monday morning, whatever. Will you watch out for this one, that one?
No, they can't do that. But Joe, it was also confirmed to me that the thieves are well aware of the GDPR laws, and they know to a certain extent the GDPR laws favour the criminals in this country as opposed to the victims. And that's just my own opinion and my own experience. And fair enough. So my wallet was stolen. That might be considered petty theft or maybe a small crime. But if you ask any woman who's had her wallet stolen, I guarantee you she'll tell you it's actually very traumatic and very upsetting. And it's also very, very wrong that someone thinks they can take your hard-earned money.
Yeah.
I had cash and I had gift cards in it, and that they can take your hard-earned money and just walk away with it, and then keep doing it. It's so wrong.
Stay with us for a sec, Martina. Brian McNamara. Brian, what was stolen in you or your family?
How you doing, Joe? 2 weeks ago, we had two motocross bikes robbed from our property.
Wow.
Probably coming up to about the cost of just over 10 grand for the two bikes. But it's not just hearing what that lady actually had to say, Joe. It was quite nearly, I got a giggle out of it. She says the Irish laws kind of favour the thieves. And in this case, it's kind of very similar, because as I was talking to Tara earlier, I basically just had mentioned, when the police came out to do their investigation, we obviously asked the question of, do you ever chase them or can you chase them? And without helmets, the Garda will not chase, and have been told not to chase. So in a way, they're kind of giving them an invitation to say, come rob a motorbike anywhere, don't wear a helmet, and we will do effectively nothing.
Because the Garda can chase in case, God forbid, something happened, you on the stolen bike. And then to be, we don't want that happening.
Well, see, it kind of goes both ways. I live in Australia, so over there, there's theft everywhere, of course. But I just find the cops over there a little bit more heavy-handed. Given the opportunity, they will. It's basically the idea is over there, get the perpetrator off the bike as quick as possible to stop damage or hurting someone. Obviously, over excess speeds, they then call in to back to their base or whatever, and they ask for permission to pursue at a higher speed or whatever. So it's kind of, and then they make the decision. Sometimes they're told to back off, sometimes they're told to pursue, depending on the area. So,
and Brian, like you said, they were stolen from a property, was CCTV, which there was on Martina's occasion. What time, when were they stolen?
Not a kiss, Joe. It was actually the bike was, one of them was put up online, and it's kind of, if you go on Facebook groups, there's Tala Clondalkin stolen bikes. There's lots of guys saying they put bikes up, they get inquiries, people do all the negotiating in and out. They get an address, they don't show up. And at 3 or 4 in the morning, a group of young youths arrive to the property and generally break in and take it. There was a roller door, they cut the wires, they crossed the wires to put the door up. They broke locks off the bikes. And this all happened, it was in a shed beside the house, and it's probably about 15, 20 metres from the house, from the bedroom windows and stuff. So I suppose it's just a little bit uneasy to think like that. You can put stuff up online. We live out in Rush. It's a good 25, 30 minutes away from the city, where people can come out at 4 o'clock in the morning, rob a motorbike and drive it all the way back to where they came from, and nothing happens about it. And that's pretty much, I'm not going to say day in, day out, Joe, but very much week in, week out. Like, there's an Irish Independent article at the moment, and it was released in March, I was reading it. And up to March, there had been 215 motorbikes so far robbed in Dublin.
That's just motorbikes.
Motorbikes, yeah, Joe. If you actually look, now look, I can tell you 101 different stories. It happens a lot, like a lot. So
I know they're off-road, but are those motocross bikes, Brian, are they insured? Or do they have to be insured?
They don't have to be insured, Joe, no. And this is where Tara had asked a similar question. And the problem, I suppose, you come in with this, like, let's say one bike was 3,500, would the other bike was 7. Like, so your insurance on something like that, you're going to be paying a couple of grand a year easy anyway to have something like that insured. So if you have something for 3,500, 4 grand, and they want even 1,500 off you for the year, within 2 or 3 years' time, your insurance has outweighed the cost of your item. So it kind of puts you into this scenario of like, well, I can insure it, but in 2 years' time, I've then effectively, it doesn't, like, it's worthless to me because you've paid that much insurance. So I suppose you then take the risk of what you do. You don't insure them, but the risk is if you put it up online or anything like that happens, they will just come out and take it.
Yeah, okay. And by the way, you said you're extra vigilant. I found myself in the back garden in my jocks the other night with a hammer in your hand. What happened there?
Well, that was literally two nights after, right? We hear there's just noise in the yard. It's noises that we would always hear, I suppose, but after sleeping through what happened on the first night, you find yourself standing in the garden there. I grabbed the hammer and you're kind of thinking, and I'm thinking to myself going, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm in my boxers, I've no shoes on, just thought I heard a noise. It's like, how many could there be? Like, you've all these crazy things going on in your head. Like, even last night, my dog at 3 o'clock in the morning started barking. So, of course, you're up again, like, wondering, had someone come back? Are they coming back? Is it, like, it's just an uneasy feeling. See, it would just, it would be nice to know that if someone broke onto your property or into your property, if you did call the Garda, that they could be there in some sort of a reasonable time. Okay. Like, there were 48 hours coming out, so...
Many hours?
48. So, like, and look, the other side of it is as well, like, especially there was a young guy in Tala who lost his life there last week, and it's I kind of thought to myself, I'm going, like, could I have just been another headline if you went out, you know, if you did go out with your hammer and all the rest?
Don't. Brian, good to meet you. That's Brian McNamara back after this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
A battle of a different kind and a much more challenging one. Laura Lawless. Laura, good afternoon in Kildare.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm all right.
Well, you're just recovering from a stem cell transplant.
I am.
And how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, all things considering.
And you have to go back on a regular basis. So what happened when you went back? Was it last Friday?
So basically I've been on a mission for the last couple of weeks to try and get a COVID vaccination. Because basically when you have a stem cell transplant, your bone marrow is irradiated, got rid of. So you have to start all your vaccinations from scratch. And you have to be in reasonable good health after a period of time for those vaccinations to start.
But you have to start again.
Yes.
That's your point.
From square one.
Yes.
So one of the things that my consultant said was to get a COVID vaccination.
Okay.
So I said, no problem. I can do that. And at this point, I have contacted at least 15 pharmacies in my locality. I've contacted my GP. I've contacted HSC Live twice.
Okay.
I was in touch with my consultant. And this has all been happening over a period of the last 2 weeks, to no avail, basically. Long story short, I can't get a vaccine for love nor money.
And because the HSE have sent us in a statement, there's no shortage of vaccines.
No, there's no shortage of vaccines. The problem is that according to present guidelines, there are vaccines available, and they're given to pregnant women. But for people like myself and in other vulnerable situations, they're not available. How the chemists are running it at the moment is that they do the spring-summer program, which finished at the beginning of June.
Okay.
And then they start the autumn-winter program at the end of September. But these are just for boosters. These aren't for vaccines. But they don't. So in the meantime, they don't stock any vaccinations, COVID vaccinations.
HSE, there is no shortage of vaccinations.
The other thing I did find out is that chemists and GPs alike can order a vaccination, a COVID vaccination.
Okay.
But they have to order a minimum of 50.
Ah.
They can't just order one. So obviously, if you order 50 and if they're not taken up, they go to waste.
So are you saying a chemist won't do that because they have to pay for 50?
Yeah, chemists and GPs. No, that's not what the chemists and the GPs have told me. That's what HSE have said.
Well, the HSE say GPs and pharmacies requiring vaccines should place an order, they don't say minimum 50, through the normal contact channels.
Yeah.
The HSE is in regular communication with GPs, pharmacies throughout the country to ensure that there are locations. But you say, these words are all fine, but you say the action isn't there.
Exactly. And the point is that, the other point is that as it stands right now, I need a vaccination. I need a COVID vaccination because part of my recovery is to get back to normal life as possible. Which requires me also to get on public transport, which is dangerous for someone like me. And I don't think people are aware of that. The other thing is that, I can use my voice. I can say what I need. There are a lot of people out there that can't.
I wonder, is there any pharmacy listening or GP listening that for other reasons, for other people, had to order more vaccines and they've some left. If the HSE are saying you have to order a minimum of 50, sounds odd.
Yeah, well, I mean, as it stands, I have a query again in with the HSE.
Well done.
And they have told me as of Friday that I need to wait 2 to 3 weeks for a response.
But you can't wait.
Which is shocking to me.
You're recovering from stem cell.
Yeah. And I have been managing life and managing my safety very well for the past 9-10 months.
Yeah.
And I'm due to start my baby vaccinations tomorrow, my inoculation program tomorrow. And COVID vaccine is probably the hardest one to find.
It's bizarre. And Laura, how long were you in hospital for?
I was re-diagnosed in April last year, which meant that I had to have 2 rounds of chemo in Beaumont Hospital. So you have to be an inpatient for about 6 to 10 weeks in total for each round of chemo. And then I was in St. James's Hospital for my stem cell transplant for, I think, a total of 8 weeks, 7-8 weeks on a ward.
And have you been hospitalised on many occasions because of this, Lara? Do you mind me asking? Only tell me as much as you want to tell.
No, that's fine. I was first diagnosed with leukaemia in 2017 and I went through Beaumont. I was basically living in Beaumont for the guts of 8 months. I had 3 rounds of chemo. I went into remission. It was great. Got on with my life. It took a lot, but I got on with my life and was pretty healthy, was working a very physical job, loving life. And I was re-diagnosed just on checkup bloods last April. Now, you know, I've had a hard road since I got out of St. James's, but, you know, there's people that have had a harder road than me.
And well, obviously we're going to try and get the vaccine rapid COVID vaccine we're looking for. Any particular one, Lara, in terms of the name or just?
Well, no, I just need my primary COVID vaccine.
Your first one.
Yeah.
You have to go back. Yeah, the first one. Okay. Yeah. Has any GP pharmacy got primary COVID vaccines that would help that we could get to Lara or get administered to Lara, so to speak, ASAP? And because it is that, it is, I presume your immune system is compromised, is it, Lara, for a while at least?
Yeah, well, I'm classed as immunocompromised. I'm also classed as having the immune system of a 10-month-old baby. So I'm susceptible to measles, you know, shingles, everything.
Measles, wow.
So, I am. My immune system is very compromised.
Okay. And how did you discover you had leukemia? How did it?
I could go in. It could take the rest of the show to explain it to you. But I basically got very ill in 2017.
And did you know what was happening?
No, I didn't have a clue.
Yeah.
I went to my GP, my locum at the time, and thank God it was her, because she sent me straight into Blanchardstown with a possible need to go on antibiotics IV. I think at the time she knew or had an idea of what was going on, but obviously she couldn't say it. So I went into Blanchardstown that same day, and I was, within 48 hours, I was diagnosed with leukemia and started chemo.
Now, you're much younger than I am, but when we were children, when you heard the word leukemia, it sent shudders. Though I now know, through mainly the brilliant work of paediatricians in Ireland, like Owen Smith and all his various teams, that childhood leukemia, I think the survival rate now is well over 90%, thankfully. And so you had, is it one stem cell transplant you've had, so to speak, one round or two?
Yes, I had one stem cell transplant because it's the only available treatment left for my leukemia. Thankfully, it has worked. Of course, there is never a cure.
Yeah.
There's only the word remission.
And what about work and life and getting back to normal? And
It's a challenge. I have an incredible support network around me. I'm really, really lucky. My family, friends, my husband, my team in St. James's Hospital. You know, I'm very, very lucky. And it takes a lot of work. And, you know, I have an amazing therapist as well.
Brilliant.
That I see every week.
Wow.
And without all of those supports, I probably would have lost my mind at this point, because it is horrendous.
And you quite obviously haven't, and you've actually added to that by saying, and you said it to me earlier, I can speak out.
Yeah,
other
I can.
People can't.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Now, I mean, I would really love to get a COVID vaccination, and that's my goal coming on here today.
Yeah.
You know, and if that can be fulfilled, fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, preferably without having to travel too far. But, yeah, it's just something that, you know, people in my situation and vulnerable people in general should have easy access to and don't. I've always been, you know, a fighter. I've always been able, on a level, to say what I need and fight for what I need. and fight to be heard.
But I presume, so, Lara, if you had if you had stem cell transplant, you had chemo before that, did you?
Yeah, I had two rounds of chemo and Bowment, and then I had to do 2 weeks of irradiation chemo in James's before I received the stem cell transplant. And that chemo is very, very aggressive chemo, makes you very, very ill and basically destroys your own bone marrow in order for the stem cell to grow new bone marrow.
And Laura, who was it your own idea to go for therapy? You know, talk therapy as well, obviously. As you say, you'd be out of your mind if you didn't. Whose idea was that?
Well, I've always had a therapist of some sort at different stages in my life. Yeah, you know, I part-trained as a therapist, I know that that's really important work. So between asking for what I need and, you know, the psych-oncology team in both Beaumont and James's, I was able to get what I needed.
Okay, well done. So you're quite clear. We're looking for COVID, the primary COVID vaccine.
Yeah.
How long have you been looking for this, Lara? I'm going to get annoyed now if it's a long time. How long have you been looking for it from the HSE?
From the HSE since the 18th of July, because I didn't know that I could contact the HSE live contact number to get it. My first stop, obviously, was my consultant.
Yeah,
the next stop was my GP.
Yeah.
The next stop was a chemist that I knew of.
Because you presumed it was going to be straightforward.
Pretty much, pretty much,
Okay, Lara, keep in touch. We'll keep in touch with you.
Thanks very much.
And the HSE have just been on to say they're going to get someone to contact you within the next hour or so, I'm told. They'll get someone to contact you directly. Keep fighting, will you? That sounds condescending. But above all, Lara, that line has really hit me now, what you said earlier. I have a voice. I've had stem cell transplant. The future is the future. But I can speak out on behalf of other people. What a gift.
I'm not here to start a cause or anything, but people in my position should be given easier support to get what they need to live their life that they fought for.
I cannot think of any better words to end the programme. Lara, thanks indeed. We'll keep in touch. That's Lara Lawless from Kildare. Ruth Kennington on sound, Stephen Higgins is the broadcast coordinator, Annette Egan produced, and Catherine Thomas is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer, in store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.